Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pinier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome the Pitcher of the Week in the American Association, Sioux City Explorers ace Solomon Bates. Solomon, thanks for joining us this week.
Kevin and Rob, thank you for having me this weekend.
Well, Solomon, let's just talk about this. Fantastic week for you. 15 strikeout performance in the one game. Had it carried a no-hitter into the sixth. Tell us a little bit about how you're feeling about your game at this particular point.
Right now, I feel like I'm not even like scratching the surface of how good I can be yet, but I went out to Venezuela last year and I faced a lot of major league hitters, and I feel like that helped me grow as a pitcher that I've wanted to be.
As you were entering into that game, the 15 strikeout performance you had this week, could you just maybe feel a little something extra for that game? Like you were just really on that night when you started?
To be honest, I don't know what happened. Just after the first strikeout, I blacked out from there, and then it was just go mode from there. I don't know. I had a little anger in me that I've never had before, and I just wanted to strike out the whole phone.
Well, man, did Steve Montgomery have any part in you getting a little angry on there?
He did not. He actually, seeing his video surface made me laugh a lot of him taking first base all the way to the clubhouse. But he told me, he was like, after that game that I pitched in, he was like, he's never seen a game other like that than McCovey. He's the one that had like the 17 strikeouts one game. He said that was the best,
yeah,
the second best game that he's seen his whole life so far.
Wow.
You know, I was watching it from home, and being a part of this show, I feel like I have to be a neutral observer of the league, but I'll be honest with you, I was rooting for you as the game went on and the strikeouts were racking up because you were putting on a heck of a show.
I don't know what happened. After the game, it took me a long time to realize what I did.
Was that a career high?
It came against. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Was that a career high for you for strikeouts?
It was. I've always wanted to be a starter, especially in the Giants organization. I kept like harping to them, but I wanted to be a starter. They told me I wasn't good enough. So me finally being able to be a starter, I'm finally able to prove like what I want to be.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment because it looked like the Giants exclusively had you in the bullpen. I think you made like three starts, if I remember, in the Giants organization. What was it that they were seeing that they just didn't think that was going to work out? Because, boy, it sure seems since you got to Sioux City, you've been rolling in that position.
Yes, they said that I didn't have a fast enough fastball, and I'm sitting 94 to 96. They said that I didn't have a good enough, like, off-speed pitches, but I've developed the cutter, I developed the slider, I made my curveball way more better than it was before, and then I developed a changeup as well. So it's all working in my favor, and I'm just happy that it is.
Is that where part of the anger comes from, where you've been told that you weren't good enough to be a starter by the Giants, and you feel like you're carrying that chip on the shoulder when you go out to the mound?
Oh, always. But I love it when people tell me that I'm not good enough. I get more of a amp to prove it, but it's not like proving it to them. It's more of proving it to myself because after the game, I literally go over videos and I'm just like, okay, who was that person out on the mound? How can I bring him back out every single time?
When you watch that game, looking back on it then afterwards, you know, what were your thoughts about how you were approaching the game? Like how you challenged Kansas City? They were on a roll when you come into that contest. You just shut them down. What were you seeing in yourself that you thought, man, I really had their number this night?
I just knew that everything I've been through at this point of time, I was like, no matter what everything I've been through, it like shaped me for this moment right here. Like I can go out there and compete, and no matter what, I'm going to get the job done. So I have more of a strong confidence for myself now than anything else. I don't know. I'm waiting to get the video for the 15 strikeouts. I haven't gotten it. I like want to see every single strikeout because I really blacked out and I didn't know what I was throwing to each hitter, but I just knew that I was feeling myself that game.
beyond the physical part of it, you know, that you're talking about, you feel that your stuff is as outstanding as a starter, and it clearly has been so far. What's the mental approach like different for you, or is it different between the bullpen and the starting rotation?
Starting rotation, I've always wanted to be a starter, like, my whole life. Even, like, as a little kid, I've always dreamt of being, like, a major league starter. I feel more at home being a starter than I do as a relief pitcher, because I like the pressure that's on me as a starter. I love pressure. I love having to control a game. I love deciding whether if we win or lose, because 9 out of 10 times I'm going to win, because that's my confidence that I have. And I had a mental skills coach that always told me, like, you don't get what you want, or you don't get what you want, you get who you are. So once I, like, kept that in my mind all the time, I just believe that I'm one of the best pitchers out there.
Now, last year when you came to Sioux City, you were pitching out of the pen.
Yeah.
And then when you came in this year, was it a conversation you had with Steve Montgomery where you said, hey, I'll come back, but I want to be a starter? How did that process come along for you to get into the rotation?
So I told Mongo, I was like, hey, Steve, I'm going out to Columbia. And then I was like, I'm going to start out there. And then I got a call to go to Venezuela. And I was like, he's like, you're going to Venezuela? I'm like, yeah, I'm out here right now. And he was like, well, deciding on how you start against major league hitters, it'll, like, let me know if you're an actual good starter or if you can actually start. But I pitched one game last year. I gotten to open one game. It was just 5 innings. And out of those 5 innings, I had 10 strikeouts last year. And so since then, he was like, have you always wanted to be a starter? I was like, yeah, I kept telling the Giants that I wanted to be a starter. They just did not hear me out. They wanted everything their way. And I just kept telling them, like, if you want more out of me, let me be a starter, because I can go as many innings as you want me to. And then once he saw that, and then I was being truthfully honest about it, he was like, yeah, you're going to be a starter.
Have you found it's been a different approach to your pitching, where instead of coming out of the pen where you're maybe going to throw an inning and face like 4 batters, you're realizing going into it that you're going to have to go through the order 3 times. They're going to see your stuff twice, and you're going to have to make adjustments. Have you found that you are pitching differently as a starter than you were out of the pen?
As I pitch as a starter, my stuff gets better as the game goes on. Like, I get faster. I have more of a better shape to my curveball, to my changeup, to my cutter, to my slider. Like, it gets better as I go on. As a reliever, they mainly look for guys who throw hard that can blow it past them for one inning. But I feel like I can do that for more than just one inning. And I feel like me being a starter is a calling for me that is going to work out for me.
So what's your between inning strategy then? Do you generally just whatever, or are you in the corner of the dugout and telling guys, hey, don't talk to me, I'm in the zone? Or are you just right on the bench cheering the guys? What is your mentality during the game between innings?
To be honest, I'm fully locked in. I'm watching everybody. I'm seeing how everybody acts in the dugout. I'm seeing the mannerisms. I'm seeing, like, what they do after an approach, or, like, how they act when they go into the game, when they come out. Like, I watch everything, and I try to make sure if I'm giving you 150%, everybody else on the team has to give me that same exact energy that I'm giving everybody else. Once I don't see it, I'll make sure, okay, like, they're not giving me the energy that I want. I got to go this whole game. I can't like, take off a pitch. I have to make sure I'm squared away on each pitch. So I look at everything.
You know, you would think with a name like Solomon, when you say something, they would think you were smart enough and have the right answer for something. Yeah, I mean, that just seems odd.
That's what I thought. But they did not believe it. Like, I watch everybody's mannerisms during the game just to make sure they're not letting one at-bat take them out of the game. But when I do see that, I make note of it, and then I talk to them after I come out the game.
Now, if you just had the one incredible start, that would have really been something. But you come back with another fantastic outing on Sunday against Fargo in a great pitching matchup all game long. I mean, that was really a very exciting game. Usually a person doesn't follow up a huge strikeout performance with a no-hit bid. You know, tell us a little bit about your performance yesterday.
Oh, that performance upset me because I wanted another 50-strikeout game, to be honest. I wanted me and my friend made a bet that I wouldn't get close to 30 strikeouts this week or last weekend. And I was like, no, I'm going to get exactly 30 strikeouts. Like, I told him the first game, I was like, first game I'm getting 15. And then I realized that I got 15, like, 4 hours after the game. I'm just like, oh, crap, like, I got 15 strikeouts. I'm like, all right, I want another, like, 10 or 15 more. And then once I kept getting closer and closer to it, they're just like, wait, no, you're crazy. But I did want another 15 strikeout game. It upset me that I didn't get more than 7 strikeouts.
I do want to thank you for that performance yesterday because following the league throughout the week, there were a lot of really good pitching performances. And I even talked to a couple of people. I said, I really hope Solomon Bates has a good second start on Sunday because he's going to really make the decision real easy for us. Otherwise, it might be tough. But you made it simple. There was no other choice for pitcher of the week but you.
Thank you. I'm going to be honest, that game yesterday was cold, and I could not feel my fingertips, so I knew I just had to pitch to contact. I was like, as long as I'm pitching to contact, it's cold out here, it's going to break bat. I got to jam them inside. I got to make sure I'm getting my pitches to where they needed to be. And then once the sun came out a little bit, I was like, okay, let's get the strikeout down.
It sounds like you like the high strikeout game a little bit more than maybe the low hit game. Would that be an accurate description for you?
I want both. I want no hits and I want a high strikeout game. But I know in a perfect world, like the world's not perfect, you can't have both. So I have to be fine with one or the other, and I have to let my mind know that I'm not perfect, and I just have to like be okay with what I'm giving. As long as I know I'm giving like 1,000% out there, I'm fine with it.
When your team stakes you to the one-run lead yesterday, and then, you know, you come out on fire right off the bat, Fargo really has no answers for you for a while there. Do you feel like one run was all I needed here today?
Yesterday, I felt like that because I remember last year, I want to say that team was the one team I didn't pitch well against. And I remembered all the hitters that I didn't pitch well against, and I was coming at them yesterday, but they weren't in the lineup, so it kind of upset me. But I just knew that as long as I show myself against these coaches, it'll be fine. Like, I was coming at that team no matter what. However, I felt if I was tired, if I had a lot of energy, I was coming at them.
Now, Kevin asked you a little bit about talking with Steve Montgomery about moving into the starting rotation. How important is it to you personally to have a manager and a pitching coach like Bobby Post who seem to have complete confidence that every time you go out, you're going to handle the job and they're just going to let you have the ball?
No, these coaches, I couldn't have asked for better coaches. These two coaches, I thank them for everything. I thank them for not, like, looking past me because of, like, what happened last year, like, the whole coming out thing. And Bobby Post, he is just like my pitching coach that I had back from home, Dave Coggins. He teaches the pocket path. So, like, once I told Bobby, like, what I was working with, like, working on back at home, and, like, I showed him everything, and I, like, told him, like, sometimes, like, my glove gets too high, like, can you watch that? He makes sure he watches everything and makes sure that my delivery is the same. And then Mongo, he believes in all of his guys, like, tremendously. We couldn't ask for two better coaches other than Bobby and Mongo. Like, they have to be, like, the best two coaches that I've ever had. And I want to say this is minor league, or, like, I want to say independent ball is minor league, but, like, throughout the minor league like career, this is, like, two best coaches I've ever had.
Now, you were talking to us a little bit before the show about the big third base stealing, I guess we'll call it, a few days ago. But what was that like in the dugout when Mongo walked off the third base?
It was funny. because I knew those umpires did not like Mongo for some reason, or they didn't like our team. Because every time we have those umpires, there's always bad calls. It could just be like I'm being biased because it's my team. You know, I don't want to like be too biased, but every time we have them, it's horrible call after horrible call, and then they'll make a decision. It'll be a bad decision. So I was just hoping that Mongo did something drastic that game to make it go worldwide, and he did. I was cheering him on when he took the base.
What is your relationship like with the other starters? Do you work with them? Do you talk to them about stuff? Do you guys kind of share your thoughts on how to attack hitters?
Yeah, with me, I told them that I have an open door policy. I've played with Trenton Popacar on the Giants organization. He was a starter too, and then we moved him into the bullpen. So we both got released at the same time, and then I played with Mitch last year, and then I met the other two starters this year. But I'm an open book. If they see something that I'm doing and they want to learn how to do it, I'm willing to help. That's how I am. Like we all have an open door policy to where like if we see that we're not competing on the mound, we'll tell each other. Like we'll get in each other's faces and tell each other to compete because like we know how good we are as a staff.
You know, I wonder for you, Solomon, is that clearly, if the Giants would have listened to you from the start, your career in the minor leagues would have been different if they had just given you a chance to that starting rotation. Bitterness about that? I'm not looking for you to crack down on the Giants or something like that, but it's like, hey, if you guys would have just listened, you know, here's the results.
You know, you could have bitterness. You could just throw it over your shoulder and let it go. That's been my whole motto. I just know that I have a lot of things to prove to myself, and I want to leave my name in history books. So I wanted to do it as a starter. Since I'm getting that opportunity to do it, I'm just running with it. I don't want to, like, take it for granted. I don't want to always think about the past. You know, the Giants did what they felt was best for them. So I'm just hoping one day I get to face them in the World Series and the game's on the line and I get to start that game.
No, I think one of the most interesting relationship in sports is the relationship between a pitcher and catcher. No greater trust that a pitcher has to have in terms of, you know, this is the guy helping you to call the game and making sure that you're comfortable on the mound and some of that. So how do you build that relationship with your catchers?
Oh, I, Wilfredo. So Wilfredo Jimenez, I got to play against him in Venezuela last year. And he said that he's always watched me pitch. So, like, when he wasn't playing, he'd sit there and watch me pitch. And the very first game that he caught me, it was like he was taking what I was thinking into my mind and calling it. So I was like, okay, I'll have to shake him off. It's like I've always had a catcher like that, and that was Blake Sable. He's with the Giants right now. That's been my catcher. And then Joey Bart, too, like when I played with them for 1 year, they always, like, knew what I wanted to throw. So, like, having Wilfredo and having that mature, like, catcher back there, it's amazing because they already know what you want to throw. They already, like, we'll talk about a game plan. Like, the 15 strikeout game, right before the game, I told Wilfredo, I was like, every time you catch me, I get more than 8 to, like, 10 strikeouts. I was like, today I want more. And he was like, all right. So he remembered that, and then after that, it was just, he knew everything that I wanted to throw, so it was just easier.
Why Sioux City? Why did you decide that the Explorers were the right pick spot for you last year?
No one else gave me a chance other than Sioux City. No one else gave me a chance after the coming out story other than Sioux City.
Had you ever been to Sioux City before they signed you? Have you ever heard of Sioux City before they signed you?
I've never heard of Sioux City before they signed me. It was once my agent told me that I was going to Sioux City, I was like, okay, where is that? He was like, Iowa. And I was like, oh, gosh, like, how does it look? And he was like, it's not the best establishment, but it's Iowa. And I was like, okay, like, I'll go check it out. Like, the very first weekend I was there, I was against it. I was completely against it. Because I'm used to Richmond, Virginia. I'm used to San Jose. I'm used to, like, places that draw a bigger crowd, but here, like, you have to really love baseball to keep competing. And I was like, if they're giving me a shot to compete, like, why not?
When they told you Iowa, were you thinking, like, Field of Dreams and Shoeless Joe Jackson and all that stuff?
Yes, I was thinking that, and then it wasn't that. I was like, oh, gosh.
You know, it's interesting. Sioux City draws kind of small crowds, but very devout fans they have there. That group that's there is really into the game and knows their team well. And so how is your relationship built with those, with the fans there and for the Explorers?
It's crazy. I'm a fan favorite right now, which it's shocking to me because I'm used to, like, other people getting, like, blown up in front of me, like, other people that are, like, new to the field, like, they first come in, they're getting blown up, but I knew that this is the start of my dreams, to where if I learn how to handle the crowd here and learn how to handle, like, people liking me, then I can do it anywhere else.
Now, let's talk about that Explorers team. Been a little bit inconsistent, you guys have been so far this season. How do you see things going in these remaining 60-plus games?
I feel like we're going to be good because we finally have that missing piece to our infield, and we finally have a good middle infield to where they're fast. Like, Kyle Kasser, he's really good, but Delvin Zinn and Miguel, the shortstop, and then having Matt Lloyd at third base, that is just a whole different type of infield that we have that is crazy. And then we have a lot of hitters that can just come in and hit off the bench. So I think that we'll be really good. We have a lot of guys that are finally learning their confidence and learning themselves and learning, like, how to come back from a bad game. And then they always ask me, like, what do you do after you have, like, a horrible start? I'm just like, I know what type of pitcher I am. I've showed it many times before, so I just remember all the good times and not try to harp on the negative.
Sioux Falls comes into town to start out your week for you guys. Then you travel on to Lincoln, a team that you're battling right now for playoff position.
Yeah.
What do you see this week looking like ahead for you?
I feel like this week is going to be really good. I feel like we needed to play against Kansas and show that we're a really good team, and we needed to go out and take two against Fargo and show that we're a really good team. We try to overthink most of the times when we don't need to. And I feel like now, since we see how, if we compete to our fullest potential, that no one's taking us out. I really do feel like we have the best team out here. Like, I said that in the beginning, I'm going to say it now.
Now, I'm curious, the last time Lincoln came to town, you had a little bit of a tough outing against them. You're carrying a little chip on your shoulder about that one, trying to get their number for this game.
Which one, Sioux Falls?
For Lincoln. So gave up four runs in five innings the last time you faced them.
Yeah, I'm coming at them, too. I'm happy that I get to start on Saturday. I'm happy. I get to start against them again. It's going to be a great one.
You know, I watched a couple of those games, and it seems like there's a pretty good bunch of animosity between the two ball clubs right now. I don't want you to say anything on here that's going to be potential bulletin board material, but are you sensing the rivalry between the two clubs?
Yes, I sense it more than ever. I feel like that last series that we had against Lincoln, it showed that we have to compete against them. Like, I feel like they're the only team that we go head-to-head with. I feel like other teams, we just play down to their potential, and then it beats us. But when we play better teams, we play a lot better. It's just that our energy fluctuates. Like, after our starters come out, our energy fluctuates. Like, the starters are the main ones who have the energy. We control the game. We keep it in there. As long as our five ace starters that we have are good, we're going to be good.
You know, I think a lot of people look around the league and consider this like Fargo and Kansas City at the top of the division, and then it's like the other four teams down battling for those final two spots. How do you guys see yourselves?
To be honest, I see us at the top. But is it because I have that confidence, and our starters have that confidence too? I know that we're at the top. Like, I have no worries about how we play as long as we come back and play how we should play the next day.
I know USC is considered like a big football school. They have a great baseball program as well. What was it like for you to play there in the Pac-12?
It was amazing. To be honest, with them, they did the same thing that the Giants did with me. I had to get the alumni to tell the coach to let me start, or they were going to take their sponsorships away. So sounds crazy. Once that happened, I just started flourishing for them because I always knew I wanted to be a starter. But I had this one alumni named Shelly Andrews, and he was the main one that went into the office and was like, "Dan Hubs, if you don't start Solomon, we're going to take all of our sponsorships away." So they had to force him to start me. And then once they realized, oh, he is a starter, they were like, "Okay, like, we will never doubt you again, Shelly." So I was thankful for that. And I used that 1 year to get drafted. That was the 1 year I had to use to get drafted by the Giants.
Well, it's good to have friends in high places, I guess, so to speak.
Oh, I'm thankful for him. Like, I text him to this very day, and I'm like, "Shelly, I can't thank you enough," because he is one of the main reasons that I got drafted out of USC.
Wow. Now, we ask this question a lot of people that are having sensational seasons out here. I'm just curious, now that you've come out here, shown that you can dominate as a starter, are teams at least, are your agents getting a call about you at all, or are you just kind of not worrying about that and just playing ball?
I'm trying to not worry about it and just play ball, but no teams have called my agent yet. The coaches said that there have been some scouts out there watching me, but they haven't given them an answer yet. And then I'll see the other teams pick up other pitchers, and I'm just like, all right, it's not my time. Like, stay focused, you know, stay grounded, you know, just go out there and keep pitching and competing every game, and you'll get what you want in life. So I'm just trying to stay grounded and not try to overthink about that.
I find guys that go to play overseas during winter ball have very unique experiences. So was there a difference between playing in Colombia and Venezuela, or crowds are the same? What was that experience like for you?
Colombia felt like high A, low A to me. Venezuela actually felt like AAA major league hitters to me.
Were the crowds different at all in the way they get into baseball?
Venezuela, that's how we have American football out here. That's their American football out there. Like, it has like 22,000 fans like every game and more.
Wow.
Yeah, and I got to face people like Gleyber Torres, Acuña Jr. Gleyber Torres is 0-3 on me right now, which I'm happy about. Orlando Arcia, he's like, I want to say like 2-5 off of me. I got sick one game, so I gave up a hit. But there was this one playoff game where I pitched against Orlando Arcia and then like Gleyber Torres and all those guys, and I took a shutout into the sixth inning. But then like I got sick out there, so I was like filling it after the sixth inning. Like, I used all my energy in those first six innings.
What's that like when you're standing there and you're looking and there's a major leaguer ready to hit off against you. Do you just try to focus on your own game, or do you get a little starstruck?
I don't realize there's a major league hitter until after the fact. I'm just like when after I would go home, I'm like, I just faced Gleyber Torres. Like, that's crazy. And then I'll like tweet it and the people are like, "Oh my God, did you really?" And I'm like, "Yes." It's an amazing experience. It's something that I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to be a major league pitcher and face major league hitting. And I see that my talent and my hard work actually does pay off, and I can face those major league hitters and get them out. So I'm excited to see where this year takes me. I'm excited to see what happens.
Well, Solomon, we appreciate you joining us here tonight. And since you're a first-time guest, we got to surprise you here a little bit. So our guest gets the opportunity. final thoughts. So whatever you'd like to talk about, the floor
is yours. What do I want to talk about? I hopefully get more fans out for these next three starters that we have pitching Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They're great starters. I don't want anyone to miss out on these beautiful arms. I don't want scouts to miss out on these beautiful arms. I really do feel like we have an amazing pitching staff, and I want to get all of our pitchers and hitters seen. So if I can do that, like, let's go out there and have a ball. Like, I hope we can get more fans out this weekend.
Fantastic. Solomon Bates, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing
this. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, Kevin, great having Solomon Bates on. But before we dive into that for a minute, I just want to say that nobody's cooking anything downstairs in my daughter's house. So no smoke alarm here tonight. We can have a little quieter show. But Solomon is off to a really fast start. Well-deserving a pitcher of the week, Kevin. 2-0, 0.61 ERA, 22 strikeouts. This guy's really been phenomenal for the Explorers.
He has been. And I really hope that he does get a opportunity once again in affiliated baseball and can show a potential major league team that, hey, you know what, I am going to be a guy that can be a starter on a major league baseball team. So, you know, you can't help but to root for the guy to get that opportunity.
Now let's talk about Sioux City here for a moment, Kevin. Ninth in the power rankings this week. A team that got Matt Lloyd back and immediately saw some results for him. Jake Sanford, came off the injured reserve list for them as well. So looks like they're getting those pieces back that they need to get this offense going and coming at the right time with Sioux Falls coming to town and then going on to face Lincoln.
I feel like we haven't seen the best of this team yet. And like you said, we haven't seen a completely healthy Sioux City team, but I think it is starting to come together. And when it does, I truly believe they can make a run at the top two teams in the division.
I think the two additions that really stand out to me, Kevin, Tyler Randall returning back to the club has been phenomenal since joining, and he joins Jake Ortega and Wilfredo Jimenez to maybe make the best catching combination here in the American Association. But you talked last week about John Nogowski returning, and a guy that everybody in that locker room is going to have respect for. He loves Steve Montgomery. You feel like just the enthusiasm in that locker room could really carry this team.
I think so. And look at the corners of the infield with Matt Lloyd at third base hitting a ton and then John Nogowski at first base. That's quite a combo you got going there.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, you know, normally in the show, once the power rankings come out, we always go top to bottom, but we're going to change that up this week. Well, let's start with the bottom team in the rankings, and that's the Winnipeg Goldeyes, who got off to a reasonable start. We're playing very well at home, but things have not been going well for them lately, Kevin, and it is just showing in the way this team just cannot, they're falling and can't get up right now.
It's been a real, real bad situation for the Goldeyes franchise where you lost your longtime manager with Rick Forney, and so you're already having to make an adjustment there. And you have a new guy with Greg Taggart coming in, but things are just not clicking with that ball club. And you have to wonder how patient are the fans going to be up there with what's going on with this ball club at this point.
I find it disappointing because we're seeing some guys really starting to come into their own. Hideko Gonzalez has really turned into quite a catcher. Last year was an all-star with kind of the West did not have a great group of all-star catchers last year, and he wound up being the starter. But this year, showing some power numbers, Max Murphy starting to swing a better bat as his 11th home run of the season tonight, as you and I are talking. But there really isn't – this isn't a very deep lineup. You know, Jacob Bockley's been good, but he's not putting up David Washington numbers. And we're not seeing, you know, there's not a Wes Darvall out there. There's not those guys we became used to. And I feel like this team just doesn't have that big force right now beyond Max Murphy. And that's why they're just not getting any kind of big offensive production.
On Friday night before I headed out to do my baseball coverage for the night, I tuned in a little early to the Winnipeg versus Gary South Shore game. And I'm sitting there home in front of my TV, and you weren't getting any of the radio feed yet, but you were getting the public address announcer announcing the lineup for your Winnipeg Gold Eyes. And I'm listening to it, and I'm astonished. All right, Dalton Cruz is good. Jacob Bockley is off to a decent start. Max Murphy is Max Murphy. But other than that, I'm like, this is the most un-Winnipeg Gold Eyes lineup I've ever heard of. There's just nothing that really stands out at you other than maybe two guys.
Yeah, and you know, we got used to those 16, 17, 18 teams that had, you know, nine guys that could have been out there. The pitching staff alone, they had those big four aces for quite a while that was going with that group. And, you know, you look across this pitching staff, Luis Ramirez is a very good right-hander, and is probably going to win 10 games again this year, at least come pretty close to that. But I'm not impressed with his bullpen. Samuel Adams has had very little opportunity to go save games for them. They're just not in a position to really do very much, and it's like you're saying, it when you look at that lineup, you're just like, wow, who is this right here? I mean, you're just, and I don't mean to make a criticism of Greg Taggart. You know, he's coming in trying to get his own team and get his own stamp on this team out there, but I think people were expecting the Winnipeg Gold Eyes to turn around quickly. That's not happening for at least this season, I think.
And that was the thing with Taggart, was that it seemed like he just brought in a lot of guys that he had before instead of going out and trying to find free agents that could be impact players. And I get it. You want a certain comfort level with your ball club, but is it worth it if that ball club is going to be last place in a very competitive division? I don't know what direction this club is going in, and they're embarking on a 10-game road trip. They will not be home again till July 7th, and you know they're off to a good start, obviously, on Monday night against Lincoln, but boy, if they stumble home with like a 2-8 or 3-7 record on this road trip, I just don't see anything good coming out of this season for the Gold Eyes.
You know, Kevin, I don't have any inside information on this. I'm just throwing this out as pure conjecture at you and just kind of wondering your thoughts on this. But, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, if you wanted to play American Association baseball, you went to St. Paul, you went to Winnipeg, you went to Fargo. I mean, these were the spots that people really became associated with Wichita when they were in the league. That became the spot that you knew you were going to have the best chance to put up good numbers and play affiliate ball. Is Winnipeg no longer a destination place for a player, maybe?
I don't think it's that Winnipeg is no longer a destination. I think it's a little more difficult now with players with coming out of the COVID-19 situation. I get it. There's probably the restrictions aren't there anymore, but I know that Canada in general is a lot more leery of what's going on health-wise up there, and you know, just being up there just might not be very comfortable for some of these players at this point. But, you know, getting back to the destination teams, I don't think it's the fact that Winnipeg is not a destination place anymore. I think it's that the rest of the league are all destination places where there's just a lot of good places for these guys to go now instead of just two or three ball clubs.
I think you're absolutely right about that. You know, you're going to have a great shot to play great baseball and get a good look no matter where you are. So you might as well choose some spot that's either close to your home or a place you always wanted to play in or a place where you like that manager better or something. And it's creating an interesting dynamic for sure. I should have mentioned Winnipeg 15-24 overall, 9.5 games out of first place. They are 3.5 behind Sioux City for the fourth spot in the West Division. We jump to the East Division, Kevin. The 11th place team in the power rankings this week are the Gary South Shore Railcats, another team that got off to a good start, but 2-8 in their last 10. Really in just a prolonged month-long slump for this club right now. And like you talked a couple weeks ago about Greg Taggart maybe not having anybody he can go out and get to pull the trigger on, right now I don't know what manager Lamar Rogers does right now to try to improve this club, because all these guys should be performing at least a little bit better than they are right now, and they're just not performing for him.
I would put Gary Southshore right now as, yeah, I know even with Winnipeg being a last place team, we thought that they're going to struggle a bit with Greg Taggart having to retool the team, but I would put Gary Southshore right now as the biggest disappointment in the American Association. I know as we all talked before the season began, we were pretty excited about the fact that Gary Southshore had built momentum last year. Granted, they did not make the playoffs. They stumbled down the stretch, but we all had optimism before the beginning of the season that, you know, this may be the year that Gary Southshore gets back into a playoff position, but boy, it's been a real brutal stretch for this ball club. And you know, as many teams back in the day could say, going to Fargo and Winnipeg for a six-game road trip, it's the road trip of doom, and it was for Gary Southshore, as they only won one game of the six, and they had to hold on for dear life to win that one, 12-11 on Friday night.
Yeah, a team that is with a 5.22 ERA, that is eighth in the league right now, and they were thriving behind their pitching staff for the first half of last season before the group just wore out. But this is a club that is not going to produce. I mean, they're going to probably have some pretty decent home run numbers again this year in comparison to what we've seen in the past. But they're not going to be scoring 6-7 runs a game out there. So they have to get a pitching staff that really shuts down opponents. They get Harrison Francis back after coming off the disabled list. The question is that I look at this team, Kevin, I think they got to have at least two new starters to join this club, because I don't know where they're going right now.
But where do you get those starters? Unless there's a starting pitchers R Us store somewhere in downtown Gary, it's going to be really tough to find reinforcements at this time of the year.
Let's move to the Lake Country Dockhounds, 10th in the power rankings this week. They are 16-23, 8 games out of first place behind Milwaukee in the East. Right now, 3.5 behind King County for 4th place in this division. You and I were talking this week about, boy, Lake Country kind of fell backward, and huge losses to the pitching staff. Alex McCray winds up going, retiring. Nick Harold winds up getting his contract purchased. They're battling some injuries on this group. I don't want to be down on this club yet. They just faced a Cleburne Railroaders team for 6 games, and that's not an easy opponent to face. So do you have concern about this club right now?
I have concern about the starting staff at this point. I'm kind of let down by the performance of Tyler Pike this year. I felt like we were going to see a lot more out of him, but it doesn't seem like it's been the usual Tyler Pike this year. I watched him pitch a little bit. It doesn't seem like his big looping curveball is fooling hitters like it used to, and it's shown with a 5.8 ERA. And I just felt like he was going to be a guy that could go into Lake Country and be an ace of the staff, and it just has not worked out. And with Nick Carroll getting the chance with the Giants, The starting staff, it just really doesn't have a ton of depth right now.
The other part I kind of look at that I do worry about this team, Kevin, if you think it was bad last week with having 6 against Cleburne, now they get Chicago in town for 3 and then travel to Milwaukee. So it doesn't get any easier for this club this week, and they could easily come out of this week 1-5, maybe even 0-6 with the opponents they're facing.
That's a distinct possibility, and you know, we were getting our hopes up. I thought Ken Huckabee had this team going in the right direction that when he got the job about a month ago. But things have turned backwards a bit for the Dockhounds. And like you said, Cleburne's just a great hitting ball club. And it showed during the 6-game stretch that they were in Oconomowoc. But you know, this team's going to have to start winning some series if they're going to want teams to take notice of them.
As we mentioned, Sioux City was ninth in the rankings, 19-21, currently in fourth place in the West Division, 6 games behind Fargo. So we move to the eighth team in the rankings this week, the Sioux Falls Canaries, who are 2.5 games behind Sioux City for fourth place, 8.5 behind Fargo, a team that is starting to get some of that pitching we're hoping for, Kevin, starting to get to see some things happening. But for them and personally, it's been the guys that we had depended upon over the years to come up with big numbers for this club that struggled early out. A Wyatt Ulrich, who was not numbers early, has caught fire. Jabari Henry playing better. This is a team, you never know what you're going to wind up getting because of the ballpark they're at and the pitching, but maybe this team has what it takes to wind up being a fourth place or even a third place team in this division.
They went into Milwaukee and only took one of three games, but they were right in every one of those three games, and I think that really bodes well for this club going into the future because we've seen Canaries teams where they've gone on a road and played a really good home team and just kind of gave it away for three games. But I didn't see that with the Canaries with this trip to Milwaukee. And I think the key for them is going to be, like I've always talked about, the starting pitching is going to have to get a little more consistent. I think we're seeing flashes of progress. Mitchell Walters, outside of a rocky start yesterday, has been good. Neil Lang, I don't know what's been motivating him lately, but it seems like something's been turned on with him, and he's throwing the ball really good, and I think that's what they were expecting out of him going into the year. Akeem Bosick's been what we expected to, a 3.48 ERA. Chris Harden, I know I'm a mark for him. He's struggled a little bit lately, but with two starts in Sioux Falls, he still carries a 5.2 ERA. So, with the rotation, if Ty Culbreth could get it together, I like the rotation, to be honest with you. And there's been some arms in the bullpen, young arms, like a Seth Miller, like a Hayden Thomas said. These guys are pure rookies, but they're unfazed by the situations that Mike Myers put them in. It's been fun to watch his team progress. And Charlie Hastie, after a nightmarish series in Lincoln a few weeks ago, has got back on track. And don't look now, but I believe he's second in the league in saves. So, there's something there. The offense has been a little inconsistent. They have their moments, especially like Saturday night when they put up 12 runs and a come-from-behind victory over Lincoln. So if this team can click offensively and with pitching at the same time, I think they are a team that could crack the top four in the division.
Kevin, a guy that is likely not going to get a lot of consideration for this, but who deserves it. I mean, honestly, Akeem Bosick. And to be honest with you, the way this guy has pitched this year, a little bit of time on the disabled list, but been fantastic. I'm one of the top 10 pitchers in this league right now, I think, and maybe even top five. 3.47 ERA in Sioux Falls is outstanding. And I think this guy is really proving to be everything Mike Meyer could have wanted as his ace.
I think if they could work on one thing with him, though, is the walks, 17 walks and 33 innings. You'd like to knock that down by 50%, but other than that, he's getting up less than a hit per inning. So he's been that steady guy that when he is healthy, every 5 days he's going to go out there and battle his butt off, and usually he's going to give you a pretty good start.
Jumping into the number 7 spot, the Lincoln Salt Dogs, 19-19, 5 out of first place, 3rd place in the West Division. A team that really had a great week, a great couple of weeks, Kevin. 7-3 over the last 10, got a little bit of a roughing up over the weekend. But a team that is getting very solid pitching, timely hitting, very balanced kind of club in the sense of play, very good defense for manager Brett Jody. This is one of those teams that, man, if they could fix that bullpen, Kevin, this team would be a real threat in this division.
I think you just nailed the one glaring weakness with this club, and it is the bullpen, because starting pitching has you know, something that we thought was going to be a question mark coming to the season, where you didn't have a Kidman anymore, you didn't have a Minier anymore, but they are starting to get some good starting pitching. I mean, tonight's not one of those outings, but I look at a guy like a Tanner Brown. He's going to show you the stats of 6 ERA, but last two starts, one run in 6.2 innings in Winnipeg, and then he gives up one run on 5 hits in 6 innings in Sioux Falls with the wind blowing out. So I think we got progress there with Tanner Brown, where if he can consistently put some good starts together, it's just going to help out the rest of the guys. And I think, although the batting stats aren't gaudy, this Lincoln team can put up runs. And, you know, just like we mentioned with Sioux Falls, if you can get the pitching and you can get the batting to click at the same time, I think Lincoln's going to be a very pesky team.
A personal favorite of ours, Kevin, is Nate Sampson. Raised his batting average 30 points over the last 10, 11 days. You know, I think there were a lot of people wondering if he had anything left with him after battling some foot injuries over the last couple of seasons. But, boy, Nate's proven all those naysayers wrong.
You know, and for Nate Sampson, 5 home runs already. We know that really hasn't been a big part of his game in the past few seasons. But, and maybe I'm just tuning in on the right nights, but it just seems like, well, I'm looking at the stats here. It's 2 home runs in the last 8 games, which, you know, it's not bad. But, boy, it's if he can add a little power to what he already provides for that team, that's going to be huge as we get into the middle part of the season.
Number 6 in the rankings, the Cleveland Railroaders come off a 4-2 week there in Lincoln, or in Lincoln, in Lake Country, 5-5, though, in their last 10. They are in second place in the East, 3 games behind the Milwaukee Milkmen. It looked like this team was trying to figure itself out after Ryan Hernandez had his contract purchased. Jose Serrano was still hitting, but you weren't really sure what you were getting. Now they get Hill Alexander, was red hot. And let's focus on him for a moment, Kevin. He was our player of the week. The league went with Matt Boettcher from Alexander, 435 batting average, 4 homer, 11 RBI this past week. This guy is the real deal for the stuff, a guy you've loved since he came in the league and just really has proven to be that missing bat that they needed when Hernandez was signed.
I think Hill Alexander has always flown under the radar because, you know, last year you had a guy like a Chase Simpson that was big home run hitter, and now this year you got Jose Sermo, and Zach Naryer's always been a big offensive presence with the Railroaders, and Hill Alexander was only around for part of the regular season last year, so that may also be why he doesn't get recognized like he does. And even this year, you know, you bring in Mark Karaviotis, who we know in this league has been a great hitter. So I think Hill Alexander I would put him down as probably one of the more underrated players in the entire league. And I think this week kind of proves it, I think, when he did not manage to garner the American Association Player of the Week. But we know what we're talking about, Rob. I'm not saying the league doesn't, but, you know, I have always said I don't mind when us in the league don't agree, because there's going to be a story out on our pick, and there's going to be a story out on their pick, and that's just exposure for two players. And if that helps them out to get exposure and get noticed, more power to them.
I think it's always great when you know you have several players that are having great weeks too, you know, so that you feel like there's a lot of great competition going on out there and guys are really battling. You mentioned Karaviotis, him and Alexander yesterday, both homered twice, Karaviotis with 5 RBI, Alexander with 6. This offense produced at least 5 runs in every game against the Dockhounds this last week. They got Kevin Hilton back, and he looked like he's pitching a little bit better in his start since he returned back to the team. The starting rotation, though, is still a kind of a bit of a question mark for this club right now. And can they win at home? I mean, it's still struggling to figure out that home cooking right now, Kevin.
They have, and I don't know, maybe the team just doesn't like the hot weather, and it sounds like it is going to be very warm down there this week with Fargo Moorhead coming in. But, you know, you look up and down the rotation, there's really nobody that has emerged as a stopper at this point. And you have to wonder if Logan Watkins can make a move to bring in a guy that can be a ace of the pitching staff, or if he just feels like there is somebody already in the rotation that can step up and do the job. You know, you look at Cody Bollard, he's got an ERA of 6.03, but he's found a way to win five ball games. So goes to show you that some days he doesn't have his best stuff, but he battles and finds a way to get a win. But, you know, Nick Gardewine, obviously he stabilizes your bullpen, and the bullpen's been pretty decent for this club. But the key, like we were talking about here, is just to find two, three guys that you can count on to give you quality starts nearly every time out. And you hope it's going to be a guy like a Kevin Hilton, that now that he's healthy, he can get his season on track.
Let's jump into the number five spot here, Kevin. Now, we should say here, although the King County Cougars are technically in fourth place here in the East Division, they are just a game and a half behind Cleburne. Everybody in this East Division had a fairly mediocre week, we should say. So they were 6-4 in their last 10. A team, though, that is starting to get some production, despite the fact T.J. Bennett being released by the team, Kevin, and we're not really sure exactly what's behind that, but that was a huge loss for the club, but they're still playing pretty good baseball right now.
Well, T.J. Bennett retired, so the release part is just a formality of getting him off the roster. He has chosen to retire, and they knew it on Thursday night, and it was an appropriate send-off as Bennett got what eventually became the game-winning RBI with a single in the eighth inning to score the second and winning run of the game for the Cougars against the Chicago Dogs. Yes, you're going to miss Bennett. That's a no-doubter. So it's just going to be up to the guys around him to get it together. And when you look up and down the staff here, it looks like Jimmy Kerrigan's getting on track. Armand Upshaw's up to .262 for an average now, and he's got 16 stolen bases at the top of the lineup. Josh Allen, wow. His coming out of retirement year has been a major success so far with a .310 average. Gio Bruce has been a nice pickup. Cornelius Randolph has picked up where he left last year. Our guest last week, Jonah Davis, is 9 homers and 23 RBI. So it's just going to be a matter of everybody doing a little bit more, not just one person trying to pick up the slack from T.J. Bennett. And as we know with George Samus, he'll find a way to bring in somebody that will be maybe not as good as T.J. Bennett, but just about as good. So I'll be anxious to see what George Samus has up his sleeve there.
Well, the one thing you can always appreciate is you always know you're going to get great starting pitching, as three of the top five ERAs in this league come from Jack Fox, Weston Muir, and Tyler Beardsley. If there was a spot in this team, or at least in this pitching staff, where there would seem to be some concern, it was in that back end of the bullpen. But it looks like Daniel Vice has taken over this job, Kevin, and he's been phenomenal. The rookie has just dominated since joining the team.
Well, what a story. I mean, he had arm injuries and was out of baseball for a year or two, and Vice has emerged as the man out of the bullpen, although George Samus is not afraid to pitch him more than one inning, and he's got another option too with Logan Nissen, who I believe started the year as a closer, but now it seems like him and Beast have switched roles. So it's a pretty solid pitching staff. You know, Fox and Muir, I mean, how many weeks have we in a row do we say that Fox threw a great game, Weston Muir threw a great game? I guess right now the concern for Samus has to be C.J. Eldred, that Eldred has struggled after getting off to a really good start. And the thing to watch out for is, can Samus get Jose Fuentes on track? Fuentes was released by Milwaukee earlier this week and was picked up by Kane County, who he flourished for last season. So I think it would be imperative for Fletcher to get on track and be a good fourth guy in that rotation with Fox, Westermeer, and Tyler Beardsley, who's also been incredible this season.
Number four in the power rankings, the Chicago Dogs, 3.5 games behind Milwaukee. They are 6-4 in their last 10, a half game behind Cleveland for second. You talked about in the power rankings, Kevin, after a fantastic start for Josh Altman and been in quite a rut of late, and the team has had to get some performance out of some other guys out of here, and the league's choice this week was Matt Bocher, who came up with a 475 week, had seven RBI, I believe it was, and six runs scored, had an outstanding start to the week. They're getting production out of some other guys. Brendan Metzger now returns from the disabled list. So the slump from Altman came, I guess, at the right time because the rest of the team picked up the slack for him.
And, you know, that's a sign of a good team, too. And you hope that Altman does get on track and starts to add to the stats that he had accumulated in the first month of the season. And Bocher at the top of the lineup has had an incredible season, batting .366. Ryan Lidge is Ryan Lidge at .312. So they're going to be a sneaky team. They're not going to be a team that's going to bring in the gaudy stats, but when they're on, they find a way to get key hits and score just enough runs to win ball games. They got off to a good start last week, taking the first two games in Kane County before dropping the finale, and then dropped two out of three in Kansas City over the weekend. So I'm sure the Dogs are looking to get back on track this week.
They had an interesting acquisition this week too, Kevin, that bring in David Mabry. Mabry, I think is the way that's said. It could be Mabry, so I want to make sure I'm saying that right. But he comes over from the Mexican League. Butch Hobson's able to acquire him on a loan, and has been a guy that's had some success in both the Pioneer League and the Frontier League, putting up some pretty solid offensive numbers, not huge home run numbers, but it's a guy that gets on base. Kind of a Butch Hobson guy, you know. And when I was looking at his stats and stuff he came up, I thought, man, this is what we've come to expect out of Butch Hobson players over the last 4 or 5 years. A guy hitting .270, .280, .350 on base percentage, scoring 70 or 65 runs, driving in 65. It looks like the right kind of guy to bring in here, and it's just going to make this dog team even more formidable.
And maybe that can be a pickup, like a guy that can be, you know, like Casey Hobson. TJ, was that TJ Hobson? No.
Casey. Yeah, you're right. Casey. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
TJ Bennett, Casey Hobson.
Or, you know, like a Keon Barnum type. So we all know what a really big bat can do in that ballpark, and I'm guessing that's what they're looking for with this acquisition.
We move on to the Kansas City Monarchs, Kevin, who drop out of the top spot in the power rankings, drop down to third this week. They are in second place, tied for first in the West Division at 25-15, technically in second because their winning percentage isn't as good, but 4-6 in their last 10 after a blistering run that the club had. Fell back to earth a little bit, Kevin, and you know, Kansas City going through a little bit of some struggles right now.
I think it was a good sign for them to get two out of three against Chicago after dropping three or four in Chicago, and then having to come back home and have to face Solomon Bates after getting in back into Kansas City pretty late. I think I didn't want to bring it up earlier, but when Bates had the 15th strikeout night, it was a night after Kansas City had a long trip back home.
Well, that'll do it to you. You know, those long bus trips can really be something, especially when you haven't played them back-to-back nights like that. The team probably didn't get in until, you know, because once you get out of the ballpark by midnight or 11:30 or something, maybe even if you got out by 10:30, you're still not getting home until noon or something the next day, and then you got to go play baseball at 7 o'clock against one of the best pitchers in baseball. That's not a good combination for a team looking to put up some offense.
Yeah, no, it's not. And you know, in Sioux City played very well in Kansas City, so it was imperative for the Monarchs to get on track, and they did just that, getting 2 out of 3 wins against the Dogs.
Nice acquisition by the club in bringing in Odubel Herrera, who wound up having a 357 week in his 4 games with the club. So another Joe Calfapietra move to help bolster his club, and we'll be watching to see what he does for this team coming up here. What's
you know,
in the second,
like,
Kevin?
Oh,
I'm sorry,
like the
ahead.
Monarchs, though, they lose Keon Braxton to the Mexican League, and just right away you just bring in another guy with Odubel Herrera, a guy that was a former MLB All-Star with the Philadelphia Phillies. So it's like we always talked about with Kansas City, they don't rebuild, they just reload.
Absolutely. Staying in the number 2 spot this week, Kevin, the Milwaukee Milkmen, 24-15, holding a 3-game edge over Cleveland for the top spot in the East Division. A team just consistently winning games, Kevin. You're just in every 3-game series, you figure they're going to come up with 2 victories in a 6-game week. You contest. It's just a very consistent team, and that's the kind of club you need to be if you're going to wind up winning the championship.
Well, it was probably not the homestand they looked for, as they did drop 2 out of 3 over the weekend to the Kane County Cougars, salvaging the final game at home on Sunday afternoon after winning 2 out of 3 against Sioux Falls. But, you know, it's still a 500 week. It's nothing to panic over. And this Milwaukee team is good enough where I think we're going to see them rebound quite nicely and put up a good week this week.
It's a team that is getting pretty solid pitching out of guys like Ryan Zimmerman. As we've talked about, Christian Young has been phenomenal for them. Right now, probably the pitcher of the year in the league so far here. They're getting solid performances out of their bullpen. Gregory Vasquez got a little bit roughed up during the week, Kevin, but he's third best ERA in the league right now, or maybe it's fourth best ERA in the league. It looks like they're just looking for one other guy to kind of give them 4 solid starters right now. Maybe Frankie Bartolo really fills into that spot for them, but I just don't see a huge weakness for this team right now. If you look at them, they just look like a very well-balanced club.
They are, and I think they're also looking for Kyle Mora to get on track too. And, you know, he was very good for them in 2 starts last year before being signed away, but just hasn't quite materialized for him yet. And you just wonder if Anthony Rohn will go out there and find another arm just to bolster the starting staff a bit. But overall, I mean, this team is good enough to hold on to the East Division, even though Cleburne is right on their tails.
Finishing out the power rankings, Kevin, the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, first place in the West Division, first place overall, we should say, at 24-14, holding a 5-game edge over Lincoln, who is battling at third place, tied with Kansas City in the West at the top spot. You know, Kevin, when you're winning a championship and you're off to a really fast start, affiliate clubs pay attention to you. And right now, it looks like a lot of teams have come calling on the Redhawks, and they're just suffering a lot of losses, plus some injury that's going on with the team right now.
It was a very skeleton crew for the Redhawks over this homestand. Dylan Thomas gets signed to the Mexican League, and then you had injuries to Manny Boscan. You had an injury to John Silviano, and, you know, you can only take so many blows before your depth is severely tested. So they've had to bring in guys that are fresh out of college with Jack Hansen, who was a MIAC Player of the Year. But, you know, that's tough to go from Division III baseball to professional ball. And Andy Gravdahl filled in, but it looks like, judging by point streak here, that he may have been released after his after a 1-for-11 performance in four games. There was one game where Connor McGuire had to play outfield because they were shorthanded. So you have to wonder at this point, are Boscan and Silviano both healthy enough to play on that road trip to Cleburne? Do the Red Hawks have reinforcements ready to come in to play in Cleburne? Because, boy, if you're bringing in the crew to Cleburne that scored, trying to do the math in my head, maybe 3 runs in 3 games of Sioux City, it could be a long week in Cleburne unless the pitching can be beyond stellar. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks this week.
You know, Kevin, I have to give a tip of the cap this week to Jeff Bittiger, because when you're the top team in the league and you're suffering some losses, it would seem that it would be to the advantage, we'll say, of your rivals within the league there to do nothing to help you. And if you watch the trades that have gone on over the last few weeks here, it has been Fargo going out and finding guys from other teams. Matt Goodhart today traded from Lincoln to Fargo. We saw Zach Miller got traded from Lincoln to Fargo. Garrett Alexander got traded from Cleburne to Fargo. I think it's been 5 or 6 trades that they've made over the last few weeks to acquire somebody from an opposing team. I got to give it to Bittiger. That's pretty impressive that you're getting teams within your own league to help you out like that. It's a credit to what a good job he is in really building this team for manager Chris Cullis.
I think that was a mutually good move, too, from Lincoln and Fargo-Moorhead, because Goodhart was not getting at-bats with the Lincoln Salt Dogs, and he did have a good year last year when he did get the proper amount of playing time, so I think it's a good move for both teams. It gives Goodhart a chance to hit the reset a little bit on his season, so we'll see how that materializes throughout the week in Cleburne.
Classy move for sure. You know, you like to see a guy getting a chance like that, and credit to Brett Chiodi for making a move like that. Kevin, before we start to dive in some other things, last week you and I talked about attendance, and I found it very interesting that when you don't have Chicago and Kane County at home during the week, things are significantly different. Last Sunday there was 21,000, almost 21,000 fans on Sunday for those 6 games. This Sunday, a little over 10,400. And again, Kane County and Chicago not at home. And I look at that Winnipeg at 3,400. Then you had Fargo had 2,396. After that, the other three clubs that were at home had attendances lower than 2,000. And I get it that it's kind of a tough thing out there for all the teams across partner league baseball. They have 2 teams out in the Atlantic League that are drawing better than 4,000 a game. Staten Island has been abysmal at 1,047 per contest. The Frontier League is having their challenges as well. I'm trying to bring up those numbers here for a minute. So they have 1 team at over 4,000 in the Schaumburg Boomers. Chicago area, that seems to be the spot that makes attendance there, Kevin. But teams like New Jersey, 882 per game. They have 1,000 in Trois-Rivières. I think if you're a baseball owner right now, you're looking for other ways to get revenue because it's not going to come in attendance.
I think that's why you're seeing some of these venues that are also being used for concerts throughout the summer, and with the price being paid in that, the fields are getting torn up pretty good by these other shows that are appearing at their ballparks. Looking at 2,396 in Fargo-Moorhead on Sunday, but the weather was a little less than optimal as there was a lot of cool weather in the western part of the league yesterday. I was in Sioux Falls, and I think it was maybe in the lower 70s and very windy during that game, so it wasn't the best weather for trying to draw fans, but you know, things are trending up a bit. Granted that, you know, Kansas City should be drawing more than 1,700 on a Sunday, but it's not as bad as when they were drawing like 1,100, 1,200 when we talked about it a few weeks ago. So let's get into these games and around the 4th of July, where teams will get the boost from their annual fireworks nights that will pack the parks, and maybe we'll have a better outlook on the attendance after that.
When the season began, Kevin, I was one who thought we were not going to see the same kind of offensive numbers that we've seen over the last couple of years, that pitching would start to get a lot better this year and start to even things out a little bit. I think we saw that in the first few weeks of the season. But offense is starting to pick back up here again. You have a Cleburne team with 65 homers in 41 games. I believe that there are five or six teams right now that are averaging better than one home run per game. Lincoln having a great season this year so far, after struggling to hit home runs last year. I'm not saying we're going to have a 165 home run team this year, but the offense is starting to get to look a little bit better. So I'm wondering if we're going to see ERA start to really rise by clubs over the next month or so, especially if the heat starts to rise in a lot of these stadiums.
You know, it's hard to get a read on that because, like we were talking about with Solomon Bates, there was a lot of really good pitching outings in this league last week. You had Tyler Grauer throwing a complete game shutout up in Fargo against Gary Southshore. So I agree with you. Yeah, there are teams that are raking the ball pretty good offensively, but within that, like as we talked about with Kane County, there's a lot of teams with some pretty gaudy numbers on the pitching side of the ledger. So, and you know, you talked about with things heating up during the summer. I guess that works both ways. Sometimes the pitching wears down, but within that, sometimes the batters wear down too. So I guess that will have to be a wait and see thing.
Let's jump around the rest of the leagues out there, Kevin. In the Frontier League, Rusper Estrada named as the player of the week. The New Jersey Jackals player hit had a slugging percentage of 941 with a 529 batting average, drove in 10 during the week. Jackson Hickert was the pitcher of the week for the Schaumburg Boomers, tossed a 9-inning complete game shutout to earn the pitcher of the week honors there in the Frontier League. For their standings right now, let me jump back to that here for a moment. I don't have standings right here. Why didn't I have this up? There we go. Now I got them up there. Look at me, a little behind. The Great Way Grizzlies are in first place in the West Division at 24-14, tied with the Schaumburg Boomers for the top record in that division. And the East is the New Jersey Jackals at 25-12, holding a game and a half advantage over the Sussex County Miners. They had a player in the Frontier League who also had his contract purchased. That was Randy Wynn. Congratulations to him, heading for the Cincinnati Reds organization. So congratulations, Randy. In the Atlantic League, they had a player as well. The Blue Crabs had Isaac Mattson, whose contract was purchased by the Minnesota Twins. So he will be heading back to affiliate ball. So good for him out there. In the first half standing so far in the Atlantic League, in the North Division, the York Revolution leading at 28-22. Holding a one-game edge over both Southern Maryland and the Long Island Ducks. And in the South Division, it is a race between Gastonia and High Point to grab that division, as both teams are still tied at 36 and 16, if I can say 16 correctly, with Lexington a million miles behind them in third place. And I think that is it in terms of stuff going on out there in the other two major partner leagues out there. Kevin, what have we got going on at the 10th inning stretch these days?
Well, of course, we're now 2 weeks into the vaunted American Association Power Rankings brought to you by the 10th inning stretch, and it's been interesting to see the moving up and down of teams in the 2 weeks so far, which, you know, as I always say, you get into the early part of the year, you're going to see that. And I think as the year goes on, teams will be more locked into position in the power rankings. But that's been, I've kind of combined the Sunday Insider with the power rankings to kind of make it not just a power rankings thing where we go by numbers, but also talking about stuff that's going on throughout the league during the week, and just add my own little personal touches to it.
The best of both worlds. That's what we see there. That's awesome. Kevin, we are closing out here June. That means that on Saturday, Kevin and I will be out with the Player and Pitcher of the Month, which you can catch out there at Minor League Sports Report when it comes out. We have 3 weeks away till the All-Star Game gets underway, as you and I are talking here tonight. A lot of great performances that we've seen so far here, Kevin. We've seen some guys like Josh Altman, who looked like he was going to be the MVP of the league, falling back. Nick Anderson has had a solid season for the Lincoln Salt Dogs, but looking like he's dropped off a little bit in the MVP race. Jose Sermo has really vaunted himself up there. You still got guys like Darnell Sweeney who are going to be considered. If you look at here, as we're 6 weeks into the season now here, Kevin, is there a guy really that's kind of surprised you at this point, or a player that you're just like, this is what I was expecting? What's kind of stood out to you so far 6 weeks into the season?
I think to me, there's eight guys batting over 340. Granted, now with Fargus from Kansas City and Thomas and Fargo Moorhead both off to the Mexican League, now you got six active guys that are 340 or better. But in a league where there has been some good pitching, we're seeing a lot of batters hitting over 300 and seeing a lot of names that we're not used to seeing hitting over 300. So it's been good to see the good individual performance, not just on the pitching side, but also with the batters too, the guys that we're not used to seeing hitting as well as they have been.
We're starting to see a little movement now. More affiliate clubs look like they're reaching back to partner leagues to bring in players right now. It kind of slowed down a little bit last season after a crazy 2021 and season out there. What are your thoughts? I mean, some of these guys out there, like Solomon Bates or Chris Herman, we look at some of these guys and think, man, why are these guys not there? But what's kind of your over-under right now for the remainder of the season? How many more guys do you think wind up transferring up there based upon the performances you've seen so far?
I would put it at around 12, because I think what we're running into is that Major League organizations are just stockpiling so many players at each level, where it's not like if you get a guy hurt in AAA that's a catcher. It's not like, well, geez, we're going to have to go to a partner league and sign the best catcher they got, which would be Chris Herman. They've already got three other guys that can catch. It's not that big of a deal. And then you go down to AAA, you got a bunch of catchers at that level. So I think that may be contributing to guys not being signed as much as we have seen in previous years. You know, you can have the people can go back and forth with the $15,000 transfer fee, if that's been a deterrent or not. It's not going away, folks. It's here to stay. So, and other than your lower leagues, it's the price right across the board. So that's not going away, and teams with stockpile players where it's just tougher for these guys to move up. You really have to do something special to get yourself noticed in. That's why, you know, I think maybe to the eyes of most people, it's not that big of a deal. But I think to me, when you got you and I recognizing a different player than the league does, that's exposure for two guys, and I think that's a good thing. So the more that these guys can be exposed, the better it's going to be when that opportunity does come, where a major league team is very thin at a certain position at a certain level. And I think, too, that it may not be the best player out of this league that's going to get signed. It's the player that teams have the biggest need for. I mean, let's look at it on paper. granted, it's the team that released Solomon Beasts, but San Francisco signed Nick Herold out of Lake Country. With all respect to Mr. Young Herold, Solomon Beasts is a better pitcher than Nick Herold. But I'm guessing the Giants were looking for a guy to fill a spot in a on a Class A lower Class A roster. Frankly, Solomon Beasts is too good to be signed to that level of baseball right now. So a lot of it is just some getting your name out and hopefully you're fitting into what a team's need is.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too that you look at a Nick Herold getting signed. And you think to yourself, well, what's wrong with Jack Fox and Weston Muir? I mean, there's the top two ERAs in the league. Muir's never lost a game so far in his professional career out there. And he'd be a young guy like Harold, you know, 2 years out of college. But I think you look at that and you think to yourself, okay, both those guys are going to get their shot. I think you're going to be looking at them leaving pretty soon here, too, because it seems like the young pitchers are getting a lot of attention right now. It's like it, more like it used to be, I think, Kevin. We saw 2014 through 17, 18 kind of thing. A lot of times saw a younger guy early in the season. It was the older guys late in the season that were signed as minor league teams were battling for a playoff spot or are trying to make a run for a championship in their respective leagues or whatever, and then they were bringing in a veteran guy to try to be that difference maker for them. But it's the younger guys a lot of times early in the season that get the shot. So I think if you're a guy 23 or 24 maybe old at the oldest who's got good numbers, those are going to be the first ones they're looking at, I think, at this point. So those are the guys I would say have the best shot right now.
But the problem with a guy like a Fox and a Weston Muir is that they're not popping the radar gun at 95, 96 consistently in.
True.
Right now, just the way baseball is, they want a guy that's going to come in right away and throw in the mid-90s. It's not like our heyday of baseball fandom, Rob, where if you threw 89, 90, you're going to be a very good starter in the major leagues. It's a different game now. Now, Jack Fox, Christian Young, Weston Muir are very good for this league, but there's just that gap between really good in this league and good enough to be noticed by an MILB team.
Yeah, well, you heard Solomon saying he was throwing 94, and they didn't think that was good enough. So, okay. Well, Kevin, the best part of the show. Kevin Lucco, final thoughts.
Well, you know what? We're going to end the tradition, Rob.
Uh-oh.
Nope. And, of course, since we don't do any prep work for this show whatsoever, I got this idea from a different podcast that I listen to. And at the end of the show, they don't do a final thought. They do a shout-out where they recognize somebody. It might be somebody that someone inside baseball. It could be a family member. It could be a fan. It could be a celebrity. But I want you involved in this, too. So right now I'm putting you on the spot, but
okay.
I'm going to give my shout out this week to my good friend Randy Preston of the Sioux Falls Canaries. I was just out there again this weekend, and Randy, of course, was as hospitable as ever. And the thing that impressed me with Randy is not only is he the excellent public address announcer for the Sioux Falls Canaries, but he also is one of the guys that gets the music ready for the ballpark. He helps get the press box ready for the game. He helps get the press box spread organized. Like yesterday, he made sure everybody had their vouchers for the concession stand. You know, in some areas or some teams, the public address announcer shows up, does their shtick, and that's it. But Randy Preston is all over the place in Sioux Falls, and, you know, it's always good to see him out there. So my shout-out this week is to Randy Preston.
I like it. I'm going to be a little bit selfish this week, Kevin, I'll tell you. My shout-out this week goes to my 30-year-old daughter. I'll be 31 years old here in a few days. Wait a minute, am I saying that right? No, she'll be 30 in a few days. Oh, my God, I almost said that. She'd have been really mad to me. But she was competing in Seattle, Washington last week, in the Mrs. America United pageant and won on Saturday.
Oh, so great.
I want to give a shout. Yeah, I want to give a shout out to my daughter Ashley for being Mrs. America United for this year. So congratulations to her, I will say. Awesome. Well, once again, Kevin and I want to thank Solomon Bates for joining us this week. For Kevin Luco, I'm Rob Panier. We will see you next time on This Week in the Association.